J6, number 12B.
Then we can try to translate that into metaphysical language, what it means that the serpent beguiles the woman. We saw there then that Adam blamed the woman and the Lord. But then we saw then that Eve said it was the serpent. And they say that, see, Eve was one of the first great women in the Bible because she was the one that impersonalized error. Adam personalized error. And Adam said, it's the woman, it's her fault. Or if that didn't work, then it says, then it's your fault too, God. He made error personal. But Eve impersonalized error and said, it was the serpent that beguiled me. So she said, and that serpent was what? It was that knowledge of good and evil, that knowledge of mortality that beguiled me. And therefore, it's at that time that they knew they were naked and hid. So at this fifth point, you get that whole sense of then Adam being excommunicated from the Garden of Eden, and that as it comes up. But at this point of the fifth point, you just get the serpent beguiling Eve. You get that sense of demoralization, of downfall. That's what I'm looking for. Eve is beguiled. She has a downfall, huh? If any way we would like to say or show that she eats from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and therefore their nakedness in hiding brings a sense of lack or emptiness. Yeah, you're robbed of something. Robbed would be a good word. You're being stripped or robbed of your identity. It's kind of like a demoralization or downfall, I think, is the best way one can say. She was beguiled and stripped. Yes, I would say that's a good point, Virginia. She was beguiled and stripped or robbed. So I guess, as Max said in his epitome, that it would be a knowledge of both good and evil brings death, or meaning death meaning to spiritual sense, not literal death, but a demoralization, a downfall, a robbing of one's spiritual sense. The serpent robbed Eve of her spiritual sense, you could say. That would be good also. Robbing as the opposite of the fifth day of life, where you're given everything. Here you're robbed of it. She was robbed of her spiritual sense. However you would like to say that, I like what you said then of being robbed of spiritual sense. I have down a sense of demoralization, downfall, lack. All right, so we can see that that is the exact opposite of the fifth day of creation, where instead of being robbed of our spiritual sense, we're given the abundance of life, the newness of life, the overflowing of life. You can just hear how this story is the exact opposite. Then for the sixth point, we have that whole story then of Adam, where art thou? I don't have it written here, but I'd like it if you'd put that down as the big point, because it's, where art thou, Adam? And where Adam is, then we can see that that is that standpoint then that brings, because of where they are, Eve is cursed to bring forth in sorrow. Adam is cursed to till the ground and return to dust. Eve is brings forth Cain and Abel. And remember at this point, we talked about how Cain was the first and Abel was the second. Well, Cain represents the first degree of the physical. Because remember how it said in the text how Cain was a tiller of the ground and brought that which came from the ground. Shows there with Cain how we said, and she bare his brother, that Cain was a tiller of the ground. See, that's Cain was a tiller of the physical. That's the first degree. And he brought unto the Lord an offering from the ground, you see, from the fruit of the ground, from the first degree. That's why the Lord wasn't happy with Cain, because he brought him an offering from the first degree of physicality. So you see, it showed there that the Lord didn't have respect for Cain. And that's why Cain got mad, you see. But Abel was the second son, which represents the second degree. He was the keeper of sheep. You see, he was the keeper of those moral values, the sheep, those moral qualities that we saw there on the second degree of humility and honesty. And then, you know, it doesn't show here, but as the text goes on, Cain, Abel, and Seth then was the third degree, had the qualities of the third degree. And so the story shows that the first degree of the physical always kills the second degree of the moral. That the only way that the moral can combat the physical is from the spiritual standpoint. That's what the teaching is. That on a moral effort alone, we cannot fight the physical. That usually the physical realm overcomes the moral. That's what this wants to show. But it shows that that moral standpoint is only safe when it's based on the spiritual. That's the teachings of the three degrees there. Then that other point that was interesting was then, of course, that the physical kills Abel. The first degree kills the second degree of the moral. But then that point we brought out about how a sevenfold vengeance would be upon them for killing Cain. You see, that's quite interesting how Cain then felt, because he killed Abel, his brother, then everybody was going to try to kill him. But the Lord said no, that anybody that tries to kill you, I will, he says, and the Lord said unto him, therefore whosoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. So the Lord is more or less saying what Mrs. Eddy said in Prose Works, where she said that if man tries to tend the regulator of mankind, God gets us after us for adjusting what he adjusts. And that's so important. That means that man should not play the Christ to a situation. That the Christ God is adjusting the world. This is a big teaching, where it shows that self-operating, self-regulating, error-preventing, error-correcting system is at work in the universe. And it's changing the universe from the physical to the moral to the spiritual. And that it wants to teach that God is doing it and not man. And that man shouldn't interfere in the big view with God's plan. That just can be seen in one's life. If we interfere too much in somebody else's life, we get it back. Because these people, every event is a God event, and everyone is within their own rhythm. And we know we can go just so far in interfering with the children's life, or the husband's wife, or the family's life, that we can't tell the wife everything to do. We suddenly get it back. Or the wife can't tell the husband everything they have to do. They'll let it have it back. Or the children will take just so much. You see, that everyone is an infinite individual expression of God, and rightly so. They have to work out their own salvation. They can't have... Jesus said, work out your own salvation. Occupy till I come. Jesus, if he could, would have worked out all the salvation for us. He had such great humility, the Bible says. But he didn't. He said, here is my cup, drink ye all of it. Work out your own salvation. Let the Christ work in you. I can't heal all the problems. That principle, God, that you are that infinitely individual expression of God, and every event is a God event, and therefore that Christ is operating in everyone's life. And there comes a time we have to release each one to the principle and let the principle work it out in their life. That's what this means. See, it has a tone of love there. Truth is love. Don't. Well, there's a lot within that sixth point. But basically, as we get the big point of it, we can see then that when, in answer to the question, where are you, Adam and Eve, after the downfall? Well, they're in the Adam dream. They're in the dream of mortal manhood. They're in the dream of mortal consciousness. And in that dream of mortal manhood or mortal consciousness, it's where Adam is cursed to till the ground. It's where that Adam is has to work out his own life, work out his own salvation. He's condemned to work it out himself. Well, see, that goes totally against that self-cybernetic process that works it out for us. But anyhow, it's mortal manhood, it's slavery, it's condemnation of Adam to till the ground. And then we see that Cain kills Abel. We have, eventually, we'll see that error destroys error. You have the self-destruction of error. That's that sense of killing, but what happens is that self-destruction of error comes along, that Cain will, there's another lesson there too, which is quite interesting, is that they say if you give error enough rope, it'll kill itself. See, in that cybernetic process, that error is error preventing, error correcting, insofar that self-operating system brings about the self-destruction of error. Error destroys itself because of just the fact that it's error. You get that. You don't need to interfere. That's that big teaching of Judas, that you give a Judas enough rope and it destroys itself. That's, error eventually will destroy itself. It has its, the seed of destruction within itself. 2 + 2 = 5 has the seed of destruction within itself. It can't work within the system. Mortal manhood or mortal consciousness, that's where Adam and Eve were through the downfall of knowing good and evil and practicing good and evil. With that consciousness of practicing good and evil, within that mortal consciousness has its own seed of destruction. The opposite of the sixth day of man, made in the image and likeness of God. Complete opposite. And for that last point, is then that Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod. So we have then, what would it mean that Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod? In a metaphysical interpretation, all right, we could say that in the land of sleep, that Cain went off and dwelled in the land of Nod or dreamland. That he went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of illusions, unreality. So, however, we want to say that finally mortal manhood is shut out from the presence of God, that, or we could say mortality falls into complete oblivion. Mortality has no place in God's presence. It is not. The total opposite of the seventh day of creation, where man finds fulfillment, man finds completion. Man finds his perfect place within the system. Here, man is excommunicated from the system and sent into the land of Nod. Quite a powerful record. Most people want to ignore it, as Ellen said. Why do we have to be bothered with the second record of creation? The first was nice. Well, as Virginia came along and said, this is what theology considers as man, that usually this is the second record of creation. They usually, theology takes the sixth day of creation where God creates man and then extrapolates, adds to it the second record and says, all right, God created man on the sixth day. Now this is what man is all about, and gives us the second record. So basically, where Christian Science differs from theology is we draw a line of demarcation between these two records of creation. So when we compare now the first record with the second record, as we have here in comparison, this was just a blow up, I believe I have it from Max Kapler's book on Genesis. I think it was around page 54, where just in a graphic illustration, he compares the two records. You also have it in the study aid. If whenever you look through it, you'll see the comparing between the first and second record of creation. But here, it just shows very clearly then that the first record of creation, as we said, then says, let there be light, let there be mind, let that there be the intelligence. Whereas the second record of creation says, but a mist went up, but ignorance went up, the exact opposite from light. And where the second day said, let there be the firmament, let that all intelligent mind, which is my mind, which separates the real from the unreal. Whereas a second record of creation mingles the real with the unreal and makes the real and unreal, it makes good and evil two values. Where in the first record of creation, we would say that only the good is real and evil is unreal. In the second record of creation, you have the mingling of opposite, that two-valued Aristotelian logic, where good is real and evil is real, the mingling of opposites. In the first record of creation, where that one mind, which is God, is our mind, that all-intelligent mind, which separates the real from the unreal and focuses only on the good, the real, those true ideas, those true values, that once one focuses on that, then the third day of soul appears, the land of our definite spiritual identity appears, and soul has that infinite withinness, that infinite self-containment, the ability to reproduce itself, where man is the image and likeness of God, the pure reflection of God, where soul identifies everything, names everything. Here we have, as an opposite third point, the Garden of Eden, of man in a matter body, you see, rather than a soul identity, where man's identity is idea, not matter. Where in the Garden of Eden, man's identity is a corporeal identity, a body identity, mind in a matter body. Already when we were talking about from the step from the physical to the mental to the spiritual, we saw that the physical was just a mental concept, that there really wasn't matter. Even the scientists today were saying that that whole objective universe of matter and energy does not exist except as a construction of consciousness. That matter is just a mortal belief objectified, a belief that it's matter. Matter is just what spirit looks like when misunderstood. So one can see that the first record of creation is saying that our true identity is a mind-idea identity. We're idea. We exist as an image in mind, an idea in mind. We're purely spiritual. Man is not material. He is spiritual. Isn't that what Mrs. Eddy said in the scientific statement of being? Whereas the second record of creation is man in a matter body, corporeal. And from that, the corporeal senses, everything is identified. Our perception is from the corporeal senses. Whereas in the first record of creation, our perception is from the spiritual senses. Totally different. You can see how what a different life experience we have if we perceive being from the first record as opposed to the second record. It's all a question of perception, how you look at something. We have the choice either to look at it from the first and see man as the image and likeness of God, or to look at it from the second and see man as a corporeal being. You know, it's just as Mrs. Eddy did to Adam Dickey, where she put her hand out and said to him, "What is this?" And he says, "Well, it's matter." And she says, "No, it's spirit." And he couldn't get it, so she asked him again, "What is it?" And he says, "Well, it's matter." And she says, "No, it is spirit." I think she asked him three times, and then left. And Adam Dickey was concerned and went to someone, whether it's Laura Sargent, I'm not sure. And if it was Laura Sargent, they said to him, well, Mother, Mrs. Eddy was trying to give you her highest teachings. It's just a question of perception. If you look at it from the spiritual standpoint, it's idea. If you look at it from a material standpoint, it's matter. It's the same substance. It's just the way you identify it. Therefore, matter is just spirit misunderstood, misidentified, and appears as matter. So then the fourth point, let there be principle. Let there be that government of principle, that harmonious system of principle, where our identity then is put into the principle, where we self-abnegate our personal ego for the ego, which is God, and therefore we let that principle, which is God, govern our life, that self-operating, self-governing principle, that theocracy govern our life. And when we put our identity into principle and let that self-governing principle govern, we can see the fourth point in the second record of creation is where a deep sleep fell upon Adam, that belief of life in and of matter is an illusion. This is where you get the first sense that it's a hypnotic state. It's a hypnotic trance. That's that state, really, where one believes what one sees and one sees what one believes. Huh? The way we perceive something then becomes the way that which governs us. If we perceive it as life in and of matter, then that becomes the governing concept. And that all goes on within an hypnotic state, within an illusion. And in that state, you have Eve made of Adam's rib. It just means that that state is a state that is divided. It's a state where its government, as I said, by personalities, by people, by false organizations. It's not government by the whole system of principle. And then we come to the fifth point of the fifth day of creation, where it said, let there be life, and that life which is God is our life, and that life which is God provides for us the exaltation of life, the newness of life, the abundance of life. If we go out and identify ourselves correctly as that mind, idea, identity, and self-abnegate the ego for the one ego which is God, and allow that principle which is God, that self-operating government, to govern our life, then the outcome, the effect is life. The fifth day is always an effect. We experience life. That's given to us. That's by grace. That's what we get by a consciousness going out from the first record of creation. We experience then the abundance of life, the newness of life. But if Adam, where art thou? If our consciousness is in mortality, if our consciousness is in duality, if our consciousness is in the mingling of good and evil and making evil real and fighting against evil, then that brings, that robs us of our true identity. That believing or listening to or being beguiled by the serpent of good and evil, that brings demoralization and downfall. So the effect of going out from duality of the second record of creation at the fifth point is the exact opposite of life. We get death. Not literal death, but it's death of spiritual sense. Death to our spiritual standpoint. That's where that one feels emptiness and lonely. Like we find, you know, people who have this terrific sense of loneliness are somehow being robbed of life. Somehow, somewhere, they haven't really self-abnegated the ego for the divine ego and let go and let God, so to speak, to bring them the fullness of life. Then, at the sixth point in the record of creation, at that point of truth,